paper 30, right at the beginning, which is old single column page 330. Let's see. All right, so let's. All we need to do, I think, to start off is remember what I said when we started these last three papers. We have a set of papers, a block of papers with these last three in part one that are best indicated by three words tied to the three, you know, that are each tied to one of the papers. We just did power. Obviously. And, you know, when you glance down at a page with all these neatly formed lists of beings, you know, you might think of the word order. And that's exactly what this next paper is about. It's about the order that is brought down and engages that upwelling power. I mean, we're, you know, very direct examples of what we're talking about here. We're material creatures. We're drawn up fundamentally out of that reservoir of the potential for material energy, material substance. Mind reaches on and engages that. Spirit eventually reaches down and engages that. And we begin to ascend because of that order that engaged us, and through that order that is throughout our entire journey upward. You know, we ascend through that order. If we ever got to a ceiling of order, our ascension would stop, because literally that is, you can think of that ascension as a super additive consequence of that of the relationship between purpose, energy, power, and order. Okay. So let's get into the order component here. And, you know, and just, you'll notice right in the first paragraph that they again use that designation of orders of beings, you know, and just give it that initial significance, you know, rather than just thinking of it as a synonym for group or whatever. You know, yeah, it's a group of beings, but they're an ordered group of beings. They're an order. They are order. They're the order that is reaching down to engage you. All right.
Paper 30, Personalities of the Grand Universe. The personalities and other than personal entities now functioning on paradise and in the grand universe constitute a well-nigh limitless number of living beings. Even the number of major orders and types would stagger the human imagination, let alone the countless subtypes and variations. It is, however, desirable to present something of two basic classifications of living beings, a suggestion of the paradise classification, and an abbreviation of the Aversa personality register.
Okay, pretty straightforward. Just notice their choice of words at the end there. So that they're trying to prep you right away that the challenge of giving us something that's true from the paradise classification is a much greater challenge for them. They're going to make a suggestion. You know, I've pointed that out in other places in the book. You know, notice when they say suggestion, they're very much hoping that through very cleverly crafting either what they can give you just simply because to give you any more would be impossible. You know, they're working right up against the boundaries of the Revelation mandate. When they say suggestion, they want you to take that suggestion and do something with it. It's probably nowhere more apparent than here. You know, to make these lists come alive. So they're not just these static lists of names. How is that going to, you know, bring meaning into your life? A static list of names. You've got to find the truth in these lists. And probably a lot of the truth is not going to be accessible, you know, in the early epics of unpacking this revelation. Some of this is probably very deep down the road of beginning to recognize the greater patterns in the revelation to start making some of these things come alive. But even if you're not getting anything right away, you should be looking very aggressively for something, especially when they say just suggestion. They're telling you what's immediately in front of you is just a faint shadow of what you're looking for. Now, with the other one, see, they can say an abbreviation of the Uversa personality register. So that one, they're telling you, okay, that's, you should be able to engage a little bit more directly and use it to organize things, to recognize the order of the super universe system of beings. So, but, you know, they're really hoping that you take up the challenge on this first list. And, you know, we'll point that out as we go through. All right, so then, and then there, the other thing there is just that reminder again. Remember that there's just all kinds of beings that aren't revealed because, fundamentally, because they don't have anything to do with the ascension scheme. And even if they're sort of in the mode of this, you know, the seven different schemes, you know, if they're sort of in that mode of the ascension scheme, they may be post, you know, paradise. So they're not really technically ascension anymore. You know, you've ascended and now you're out as a finaliter. And so all those things that you're really doing as a finaliter, that's not in the revelation because they weren't allowed to give you that. All that post-paradise stuff, by and large. So they may give you some initial you know, fence posts in that post-paradise space that you can try to string some truth through, but they can't, you know, go in there and start, you know, really revealing. They can disclose there a little bit, but they can't reveal. All right, what else we got here?
It is not possible to formulate comprehensive and entirely consistent classifications of the personalities of the grand universe because all of the groups are not revealed. It would require numerous additional papers to cover the further revelation required to systematically classify all groups. Such conceptual expansion would hardly be desirable, as it would deprive the thinking mortals of the next 1,000 years of that stimulus to creative speculation, which these partially revealed concepts supply. It is best that man not have an over-revelation. It stifles imagination.
Okay, so the two parts of that, you know, the first half and the second half of the paragraph. Just, you know, notice they stress, they italicize the word all in the first part there, that it's very hard to give you just part of the picture and still have it be true. Because truth demands a high degree of wholeness, you know, in order for it to be there. Whether it's, you know, within you, you know, and you're trying to engage the fullness of the temple within, encompass it with your personality so that truth can reside within that personality encompassment, or, you know, very much in kind of the outer life world, the external world picture like this. It should just give us a little bit. So they've had to try to cleverly take the paradise list especially and take parts of it that kind of stand on their own to a degree. I mean, an analogy that we have in the cosmology at large is the domains that are called universes. You know, there's a, you have these regions that have a measure of self-containedness to them. They're one turning. They're a universe. So, you know, it's like they're trying to, you know, they have the whole grand universe picture, and they've got to try to find kind of like a local universe-sized chunk in that, you know, that still has truth. But if you made it just a little bit bigger, it wouldn't be true, because you'd have to make it significantly bigger to get it true again. And if you made it any smaller, it wouldn't be true. You know, they're trying to find one of those sort of local local maxima of truth, sort of. You know, these plateaus like we have in the universe, in the universe of universes, or a local universe, a super universe, grand universe. So that's what they had to try to do. Find a subset that is basically one turning to a degree so that you can engage it, reflect on it, and begin to get the first inklings of truth. Let's see. And then the other part, are they not just stressing what I was just pointing out with the word suggestion in the first one? This whole bit about, depriving us of the stimulus that we need. They're definitely wanting you, and over the next 1,000 years, all of us, to be engaging this as aggressively as we can. They want creative speculation. It's up to us to ensure that that speculation is true and not just, random. Because they're saying this is the only way that you can, really work on using your personality. That creative imagination, invention, imagination, your creativity. You're given a creative mind because personality is identified with that mind. You need to take delight in using it. You need to be speculating. You need to be imagining. But you also need to be challenging it to be true, to be aggressively engaging it and attempting to refute your speculations and, sift through it, separate the wheat from the chaff. They don't want you to just sit on this as a sacred text. I want you to work on putting it to use, getting it to come alive. And if you want a challenge to make something come alive, look at what's in front of you here. That looks like a pretty solid challenge. If you can make that come alive, if you have enough personality consciousness to begin to make this very, unimaginative, it seems, list a domain of the imagination, now you're starting to get going with what they're looking for.
Yeah. So it does talk about 1,000 years in a couple of places. Do you think there's a significance in it?
Well,
do you think we're supposed to have this book right around the world, and everybody's supposed to, people who are going to be, is 1,000 years a meaningful time period?
The way to interpret that is don't think of it too
literally.
No, think about it literally, but don't think about it in sort of pure linear sequence where there's 1,000 years we have this and nothing else, and then maybe you'll get something else. The significance of that is, even if we get, magisterial son, Machiavelli, Melchizedek decides to actually set up a planetary headquarters, maybe Michael even, comes again, no matter what all those things that happen, there's enough here, even with all those helpers, to last this for 1,000 years.
That's all.
So that's the way I interpret that, is that it's that rich that even if I have a magisterial son working with me for several hundred years, me being mankind collectively, we're not going to run out of space here in what they've given us. Okay, so that's, if I have a philosophic uplifter helping me to really get going with the truth in the revelation, and I still won't run out of it, through 1,000 years, that means it's pretty deep. It's not too likely that I'm going to plumb its depths in my lifetime, especially without...
1,000 years is really not very long.
Well, it's not. It's a day. Think about it from their perspective. They're saying, okay, we've given you this for the next day, and then we'll give you something tomorrow. Okay, that's their perspective.
Not to lose it.
So, when you look at it that way, that's the spirit of what you're getting at. It seems like it, right. It's just one step in many, many steps of hundreds of thousands of millions and billions of years of evolution that this world is going to go through. This is not going to be what we're going to be using a billion years from now. It's not even what we're going to be using 2,000 years from now.
Those things go really wrong.
Right. But Anyway, so that's I believe that's the spirit of what they're saying here when they suggest that 1,000 years.
You don't think we'll use it for 2,000 years? Like we'll use the Bible.
Again, I mean, other things will be brought into play. Think about if they really get going again on what Adam and Eve should have been doing for 25,000 years. You know, after from when they arrived. By the time Adam and Eve are done with the world, you know, and Adam and Eve are done with the world after 25,000 years, the science on that world is basically in full flower, where the scientists are working with things all the way down to the ultimate tonic level. And you know, so like on this planet, that would have been 10,000 BC.
Wow.
Okay, we would have been at an advanced stage of scientific understanding we can't even imagine right now. Okay, obviously, we're going to need more than this to foster that kind of development. You know, they'll be bringing other things into play.
Stories of life after death and those things are probably going to be very pertinent.
Sure. They'll be using the content of this revelation, you know, on other worlds and stuff for millions and millions of years, I'm sure. Okay, but for us, you know, especially if you know if you get Michael doing all the more things that are catalyzing and making the growth here take on a more geometric character, we'll outgrow this rapidly. Okay. All right.
Section 1. The Paradise Classification of Living Beings. Living beings are classified on Paradise in accordance with inherent and attained relationship to the Paradise deities. During the grand gatherings of the central and super universes, those present are often grouped in accordance with origin. Those of triune origin, or of trinity attainment, those of dual origin, and those of single origin. It is difficult to interpret the paradise classification of living beings to the mortal mind, but we are authorized to present the following.
So just all they really did there is just stressed it again. How tricky this was to try to distill the kind of absolute wholeness of the paradise classification down to something that's not only finite but very, very circumscribedly finite. You know, that can be given to us now in our ignorance, in our lack of scope, perspective. Okay, so even though we can't appreciate it initially, we should be marveling at what we don't appreciate yet. It's obvious that there's some great mastery at play here that we don't even appreciate yet. That they managed to find a way to pick a subset of things that, with great effort, we can begin to strike step with the first threads of truth of the paradise classification. Something that normally, you know, requires some absoluteness, in your inner life to be able to engage when you're on the Isle of Paradise. So, we'll delight in what we do not yet recognize here.
So we should look at this as some kind of an axiomatic foundation.
Right. It's something that is the first little thread of a doorway, you know, that we could grab a hold of. And as we see when we get in a little ways, we don't want to underestimate what the reflection on this stuff might lead to. Because there's, like a lot of things in this book, this is way, way ahead of its time. Separate from that, 1,000 years, I mean, giving us some of this stuff right now.
Huge.
Is a great experiment. You know, this may not have ever been tried anywhere. What happens to the minds of mortals when they're given this kind of information? It could go very well, or it could go steeply wrong.
We could do both.
Or we could bifurcate, yes. All right.
Roman numeral 1. triune origin beings, beings created by all paradise deities, either as such or as the Trinity, together with the Trinitized core, which designation refers to all groups of Trinitized beings, revealed and unrevealed. A. The Supreme Spirits. 1. The Seven Master Spirits. 2. The Seven Supreme Executives. 3. The Seven Orders of Reflective Spirits.
All right. Now, remember when we went through the block of papers, the two papers on the Supreme Spirits. The key here, yes, we're in a block about where you have triune origin. One of that, it might be directly the Trinity, like they said. But if it is the three deities separately, either as such, like they said, so you have all three, separately working together. The key to get supreme spirits is the Trinity is involved, either directly or indirectly. That's what's giving it that adjective. Remember when they talk about the supreme being, where does the personal and spirit attributes of the supreme being come from? The Trinity. Okay. This whole bit about supreme, ultimate, absolute, those experiential levels, that's all being generated in differential from the existential by the Trinity. The Trinity is behind that. Okay, so when you think about the seven master spirits, you fundamentally, what you have here, when you don't have just direct Trinity origin, you have that coupling that we talked about, through all those papers. The Infinite Spirit and the Paradise Trinity have this fundamental relationship that's powering a lot of this creation of order. And, so even though the three persons are involved in getting the Master Spirits, because you have, the seven different associations of the three to get the seven, the Infinite Spirit is taking the lead. They're the primary offspring of the Infinite Spirit, but that it's that Infinite Spirit doing this in relationship very intimately with the Paradise Trinity. Okay, and that powers some consequential things like the seven supreme executives and the seven orders of the reflective spirits. You either have something going on by the Trinity, when we're in this Roman numeral number one block, it's either by the Trinity, or it's through the Trinity, or it's in relationship to the Trinity. Like when you think about the reflective spirits, especially if you say the reflective mother spirits, very definitively that mother part, see, that's directly from the Trinity, that mother deity is getting in relationship to them. The seven supreme executives, they tell you that they're trinitized by the three deities, Father, Son, Spirit. So, in other words, you take those three deities, the Father, the Son, and the Spirit, and through the Trinity, you manifest the seven supreme executives. Or like I said, the first one, that's in relationship to the Trinity. See, so it's either, there's parts that are by or through or in relationship, but the Trinity is, is very much key to get supreme spirits. Okay, so that's this little block. We'll see supreme spirits, a little bit later again, because remember, there was a whole bunch of them they talked about, and this is just three of them here. But these are the three where you can point to, the three very definitively, being the triune, this triune thing being definitively in play. All right.
B, the stationary sons of the Trinity. 1, Trinitized secrets of supremacy. 2, eternals of days. 3, ancients of days. 4, perfections of days. 5, recents of days. 6, unions of days. 7, faithfuls of days. 8, perfecters of wisdom. 9, divine counselors. 10, universal censors.
Okay, now those are all pretty straightforward, but the thing I want you to start, you know, reflecting on here is, why were there 3 in that first group? See, that's a question that's begging for an answer somehow. Then you go to this second group, and there's 10. You know, we've seen this before, the stationary sons of the Trinity, there's 10. And we tend to think of them as 7 and 3. You know, you have the 7 of days, basically, ones. And then the perfecters of wisdom, divine counselors, universal censors. It's like, well, but maybe that's one way to think about it, 7 and 3. But is there a tenness, you know, a tenfoldness to this that maybe is not immediately apparent? Certainly, the sort of the most low-hanging fruit in the in these lists is just that, the number of items in the list. Why is there that many items? Okay, let's go to the next one and see what we have there. Yeah. Okay.
Sorry. Stationary sons. You know, I can see that the first 7 are stationary, but the last 3 aren't very stationary.
Okay. You have to understand what you mean by stationary. You don't mean like a center, like a power center.
No, I meant like the days are usually stuck on the planet.
I know that's what you mean. That's what I'm answering. Right? They're not like a center where they're literally stuck on an object, and that's why they're stationary. By stationary, you mean they're not ascending or descending. They're functioning in a plane. That's what you mean by stationary. The stationary orders are those that are they're serving the needs of a particular level in the universe. You know, so you have all those of days are serving a particular level, and you know, and again with the there's certain needs on a certain level that those 3, the perfectors, wisdom, divine counselors, and universal censors, with all their mobility, yes, they're mobile, but they're not, ascending or descendingly mobile. Okay, they're horizontally mobile, not vertically mobile. Okay, so that's obviously, just thinking about that, the fact that they're stationary suns, well, it's not surprising that there's more than 3 in the list then, probably. Because there's, they're going to have to be spanning a whole bunch of levels, so that seems to be logical that there's a bigger number in that list than in the previous one. Yeah. So just that's what start getting your juices flowing, trying to think like, well, why is there this many, why are these patterns here?
See, Trinity origin and Trinitized beings. 1, Trinity teacher sons. 2, inspired Trinity spirits. 3, Havona natives. 4, paradise citizens. 5, unrevealed Trinity origin beings. 6, unrevealed deity Trinitized beings. 7, Trinitized sons of attainment. 8, Trinitized sons of selection. 9, Trinitized sons of perfection. 10, creature Trinitized sons.
Okay, so before we look at the specifics, just, it's 10 again. You know, and this is a 10 that, you haven't seen before. And so that makes you start thinking, maybe I need to rethink that 10 in the previous one. Maybe that's not just 7 plus 3. Maybe there's something more going on there, especially when I look at how they achieved a 10. They had to put in 2 unrevealed lines to get 10. So in other words, the 10-foldness is more important than the particular beings. There's something about the fact that there's a 10-foldness here that will allow you to come into some great recognition of a greater pattern in the cosmos. I mean, I don't know what that is. But it's just screaming at me that that's my challenge. I've got to figure out what this 10 is about. Why, you know, you're first like, well, I know the tenfoldness of individuality, you know, material energy, but yeah, that doesn't seem like it's really it. I mean, you know, what is the deal here? What is this tenfoldness? What kind of a profound transcendent tenfoldness groups these 10 beings together here? Takes these Trinity origin ones, these first four, and these trinitized ones, the last four, throws in a curious pair of unrevealed ones and ends up with 10. Why? What's the umbrella there? What makes those a group? Other than just, well, you know, T-R-I-N, you know, they both start with T-R-I-N. I mean, it's got to be more than that. What's the deal?
So I know I noticed in the first and second group groupings, it seemed logical to me. They started with what I would consider the higher being,
mm-hmm.
and moved their way down. But in this third group, I don't know if I would classify Paradise Citizens and lower than Trinity Teachers are.
Well, an example of that they give you to challenge you on where you put Trinity Teacher Sons in a hierarchy. If an Eternal of Days, you know, is, there's a billion of them. If one of those Eternals of Days is leaves his Havona world and goes out to a super universe to visit with the Ancients of Days, who's in charge of that Havona world while that Eternal of Days is gone?
Okay.
A Trinity Teacher Son. Maybe not as lowly as you first think.
So the order is still that way, right?
Well, so you notice, and it's like, well, okay, is that part of what, right? And see, you know, and you look at this, right? And they put them in the middle instead of the end.
Another pattern. I mean, just the way you go, sun spirits, native citizens, the beings, tame and selection, perfection, and sons.
I mean, there's all these curious patterns, you know, that you can begin to speculate on, you know, and you can rationalize anything. So initially you're going to think, oh, here, I can rationalize it like this, but then you have to try testing that, and it's like, no, I can break that, so that's not it. So you try a different way of rationalizing it. You're trying to look for the true way. You know, see, the first thing that leaps out with putting the unrevealed pair in the middle, it's like there's two pairs of four. It's like, well, am I supposed to line up those pairs of four? You know, but then you look closer, like, well, no, it's probably two pairs of five.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously the first one, it goes with the top four, their Trinity origin. Oh, so the deity, you know, Trinitized one, yeah, right, okay, are just like these other, you know, Trinitized ones. So now I've got, not only do I have 10, but it looks like I have 5 is somehow something really significant. And then you have pairs of fives.
I have no idea.
Okay.
It's got something to do with up above and coming from below. Is that what it is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, most of this is not immediately apparent, even, you know, at the level that I've taken some of these things. Now, think about what you're trying to plumb here. This is the paradise classification. Does the paradise classification, even when it's distilled down to this, is the fundamental truth that's flowing through the paradise classification a finite truth? No. It's going to be a very transcendent truth. So if I had to guess, probably what they've distilled down here is the smallest measure of absinthe pattern that they can distill out of the paradise list that you can try to reach up to and sense. What's sort of overarching the finite domain that you're in? You know, which you see, then that gets you thinking, well, that might make sense because I'm not immediately recognizing the numbers here. Is that why there's a 10 and a 5? Maybe these are numbers that are related to absinthe more than the finite, you know, patterns I've seen. Maybe the sort of common sevenfold of the finite or the tenfold of the finite, or maybe it's not quite that. Maybe it might be related, but maybe it's a little, it's something more transcendent, more generalized, more overarching. You know, something that's less direct you know, maybe more philosophical, you might say. Like I point out, I mean, you can look at the threefold actuality, and you have some very literalness things of that that you can grab a hold of, like matter, mind, spirit. Okay, that's pretty straightforward, you know. But if I say individuality, associativity, unity, to express that threefold actuality, now I'm going to a little bit more abstract space. I'm going to a little bit more transcendent, a little bit more potentially overarching recognition of the threefoldness. Maybe these are like absonite tens that are somehow transcendent expressions of the kind of finite ten that we know a little bit about. Oh, and now that I think about it, when you go to the absonite, you take the power and the personality and you synthesize it. So what was a separate ten and a separate seven, there's shades of that ten, but now upstepped. I mean, so maybe there is, maybe, you know, there, you can think of it in transcendent sense of uplifting a tenfoldness, some higher tenfoldness. Okay, so that's the kind of stuff that, you know, I'm not saying that's what it is, but those are my first thoughts of kind of playing with it.
Well, there's a lot of things organized in 10. You know, in the energy papers, mm-hmm. you know, there's the classification of matter. They say it just pertains to the organization.
Right, and that's the 10 that I'm talking about that we kind of know a little bit about.
There's the wave energy manifestations. There's mm-hmm. the decimal system.
Right, right.
So maybe it's just, you know, they're trying to keep it simple for us rather than break it into more or less.
But see, you know, what I'm kind of thinking is if I could see kind of the 10 here that I'm guessing is maybe more transcendent than, could I bring that down and could it revolutionize my understanding of the 10 down here, where all of a sudden I begin to understand, the absonite, what's being projected from the absonite to establish a tenfoldness here, say, oh, that's the higher reason why there's those 10 different energy forms, because one of them is tied to the one differs from the other in the same way that creature trinitized sons differ from trinity teacher sons or something. Is it something like that? Or the way universal censors differ from trinitized secrets of supremacy. Is there something like that? I mean, if you were thinking along those, that level of synthesis, I mean, you would have a pretty advanced cosmology.
Making an allegory out of...
What? Well, see, that's the thing. You've got to be really careful because you can rationalize anything. So you could, you know, you could make it fit, but if you can find, if that's, you know, if that, there is a relationship and you could find the true relationship, you would have a way of understanding a spectrum of beings at the same time you understand the spectrum of energies with the same thought. I mean, you'd have a very high perspective on things. But the other thing I want to mention there is, you know, just you're going to see this as we go forward. It's in this paradise list that they give you these unrevealed lines, okay? Because the number is very important. You know, it's just so obvious that, you know, they've added in as many blank lines as they had to get the number that allows truth to flow through this. And what that is, like I said, I don't know. It's not immediately apparent at all. Like I mentioned, see, they're disclosed very minimally, you know, deity trinitized beings. Well, that's a pretty minimal disclosure. But, you know, the name is not the most profound thing. It's the fact that it's one of the items in this tenfold list. That's the disclosure. And they can't reveal anything about them, but they can disclose the fact that they exist as one of the elements in this list. Yeah.
I have a message from James. He says, as with seven plus one more, the eight as in the sevenfold spirit, so too it becomes nine, three times three, plus one more to get ten.
Right. So those are the sorts of things, you know, you start to play with. You know, it's like when they tell you there's a 12-fold that's related to life. It's like, well, okay, where does 12 come from? Well, it could be 6 times 2. It could be 4 times 3. It could be, you know, where does 12 come from? You got to try to figure that out. Right, that's the sort of thing. I mean, where does the 10 come from? We saw when we were going through the energy, there was a 7 and 3. There were 7 dead energies and 3 living energies. There's a 7 plus 3. To just assume that this is a 7 plus 3 again, especially the second list of 10 doesn't look like 7 plus 3 to me. I think there's a 10-ness, that's greater in and of itself. Unless it's 5 plus 5. It's like, well, does that work for the previous one? You go, okay, so if I take the first 5, takes us down to the ceiling of the local universe. And then it goes inside. Maybe that one is 5 plus 5 also. Maybe they're revealing something a little bit higher here. That the of days, we know there's this significant difference in the of days when you get to the union of days. He's just another one down the chain. So maybe he's the first one of the second 5. Like the Trinidad's Secrets of Supremacy is the first one of the first 5. You have 2 5s. So maybe what I'm looking for in the absonite is a dual fivefoldness some way. Okay. Speaking of dual.
Roman numeral 2. Dual origin beings. Those of origin in any two of the paradise deities or otherwise created by any two beings of direct or indirect descent from the paradise deities. A. The descending orders. 1. Creator sons. 2. Magisterial sons. 3. Bright and morning stars. 4. Father Melchizedek's. 5. The Melchizedek's. 6. The Verondadek's. 7. The Lananadek's. 8. Brilliant evening stars. 9. The archangels. 10. Life carriers. 11. Unrevealed universe aids. 12. Unrevealed sons of God.
Okay, so, a couple things jump out of here. You notice between these last two lists, we've separated the creator sons, magisterial sons, from the Trinity teacher sons in the prior, because it's not just sonness, it's not just sons of God that we're looking for here. It's whether or not they're triune or dual origin. So that's a different way of looking, at those. And then you bring in the local universe sons. And regarding that last one on the list, your first thought is like, unrevealed sons of God. Is that unrevealed local universe sons of God? I mean, you notice that they said unrevealed universe aides. Yeah, how come it doesn't just say unrevealed universe sons of God? I mean, maybe because it's not just local universe sons. Maybe there are some higher sons that are, there with magisterial sons and, that are unrevealed. And we talked about that before. This certainly kind of makes you suspicious that, maybe there's a whole different order of sons that's related to, maybe there's different ones related to the other 6 schemes. I mean, one for each of the other 6 schemes, you could start speculating. Are there some paradise sons that are unrevealed? And then you say, well, how could it be? I have father, son, and I have son, spirit.
Maybe they relate to the unrevealed.
It's like, well, what... And it's like, well, what, I could do Father Spirit. Oh, but then I don't have the Son in there. It's got to be a Son, so I got to have the Son in there. You think, well, I've got them all. I've got Father, Son, I've got Son, Spirit, and I have Father, Son, Spirit. How could there be another one? Well, maybe you have beings that aren't so simply linearly expressed like that. Maybe there's some sort of more, nonlinear, absonite-like, relationship between the three deities that give rise to other sons. I mean, this is one of the things that we know so little about is, if you don't think in the simple ways of like matter, mind, spirit, and whatnot that we have from a finite point of view, how do things look? What's the geometry of that space? What's the kind of basic number patterns of that space? And that's what we're sort of trying to, they're making a big deal out of the numbers. So they're giving us some hints apparently about that. Maybe if you start to unpack these numbers, maybe it becomes self-evident how many other paradise suns there has to be to fill out the pattern, for instance.
It seems to me that this descending orders are in like a pecking order of a local universe.
Right. I mean,
and then when you get below the life carrier, you've got the unrevealed universe aides, and the unrevealed sons of God seem to maybe fit the category of material sons and daughters, do you think?
Well, I mean, you notice they're not there. I mean, they would have said that.
Yeah, they're not there.
Right. You know. I mean, you notice there's some different things here. I mean, you'll see some of the things you come to expect to see when we get to the universal list. That's the thing interesting about the paradise list is it has comes off with a different flavor to it. You know, it's taking a whole different, you know, cross-section, as it were, through the domain of beings and giving you a whole different vantage point on it. It's trying to get you to see truths that are not apparent when you look at it kind of from the bottom up. This is going to be a lot more of a top-down point of view. Like I've been trying to stress, there's probably a lot of absoniteness to what's going on here. Right, so you notice that they don't stick life carriers after Lenon Index. They stick brilliant evening stars and archangels in between the two of them, so that you don't just have a simple kind of hierarchy of suns there. But the ones that flesh it out, I mean, you know, the things like archangels and brilliant evening stars, you know, those are universe aides. So it's and sons of God. It seems to be the other two are more of the same in some way. So it seems to be about aides and sons. Okay, and it's a 12 now, not 10. Well, is that like the 12, you know, when they talk about life, or is this some other 12? Is it 6 times 2? It's like, well, I don't know. I'm sure in the paradise list, it's a lot bigger number than 12, see? But they've distilled it where this has to be 12 because this one's 10 and this one's 10 and this one's 3. And I mean, if you expanded all of the different categories, you know, if you made any one category bigger, you have to expand them all. There would be more in every one of them, I'm sure, in order to keep it holistic and true. Okay, but again, see, it was very important to put in 2 unrevealeds to get it to 12.
B, the stationary orders. 1, Abaddonters. 2, Susatia. 3, Univitatia. 4, Spiranga. 5, unrevealed dual origin beings.
Well, now you're going, okay, now I'm really suspicious that it's 5 plus 5 up there. Looks pretty, pretty sure now. Because, you know, we've got just a plain old 5. It's like, wow, 5, that's really different. I mean, I haven't run across 5 anywhere before. I'm talking about finite stuff. 5, what does 5 mean? You know, and it's very important. They had to throw in an unrevealed one, you know, and totally vanilla, unrevealed dual origin beings. I mean, how more vanilla can you get in the dual origin being section?
Just to fill them out.
You've got to know that there's 5 there in order for everything else to be true, in order to relate to everything else. Now, what's in here, you know, we haven't gotten to these beings yet. When we get up in the local universe, I'll just quickly remind you, Abaddonters are very fascinating because their parents are, one, their reflective mother spirits, but 2, the creative mother agencies of the Ancients of Days. Those Abaddonters have those 2 levels of mothers, you know, the individual superuniverse level mothers and the collective superuniverse level mothers, are the pair of parents for Abaddonters. Very fascinating beings.
Pam commented, yep. She said, it is strange that they did not mention on any list the material son and daughter, as they are descending orders.
Right.
I thought I meant ascending here, ascending material sons on the next one.
Right, so that's what you need to notice, Pam, you know, and everyone else. I mean, just notice how different this list is than the second list in this paper that has a lot more of what you're immediately expecting. This one is seriously challenging your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices that you've built up reading the Urantia book. Not what you had before the Urantia book, the ones that you've built up while you were reading it with a biased point of view, putting new wine in old wineskins. This is really trying to challenge that. It's trying to think about it in a different way so that you don't get stuck. Okay, Susatia and Univitatia, respectively, at the local universe capital and the constellation capital levels, those are offspring of Creator Son, Creator Mother Spirit. Sporanga, they're also interesting. Those aren't created beings, per se. Those are procreated beings because their parents are the Bright and Morning Star and the Father Melchizedek, which aren't creator beings. So Sporanga are procreated, not specifically created. We saw that when we were dealing with the master physical controllers. Technically, you have a procreation going on there. But you know how close to the boundary those two sons are, Gabriel and Father Melchizedek. So it's as kind of as close to creating as you can get and still be procreating. It's really close.
Well, that's really creepy because they're both male.
No. Remember, we talked about that. I mean, that very fact that you know that they're the parents of Sporanga is telling you something about the differential between the Bright Morning Star and the Father Melchizedek. We talked about that many, many times in these papers. What do you come to recognize? One is the son that's like Michael, and the other is the son that's like the Creative Mother Spirit. There's a he-she duality in those two. In the same way that they point out, here we're bringing up material sons and daughters. You get a material son and daughter, and they start procreating. And they get two sons. One son is like the father, and one son is like the mother. One son is Adam's son, and the other one is Eve's son. Right? You have a similar thing with Bright Morning Star and Father Melchizedek. And the roles that those two play, remember, once the local universe is settled in light and life, and the Trinity administration really starts to take over in the local universe, one of those aligns with the father side of the Trinity administration, the other aligns with the mother side of the Trinity administration. One of them aligns with the Ancients of Days, and one aligns with the Seven Supreme Executives. Remember how I pointed that out as we went through those papers. They would talk about coordinated. They bring in how you have a mother-father duality going on. I see. So, yes, they are from a very outside, observation perspective, two sons. But the fact that they can give rise in dual fashion to these Barangas is telling you more about what's inside that you don't immediately see. And another thing is to think about those material sons and daughters. We've talked about that before too. I mean, who are the parents of material sons and daughters?
Well, they must be single origin because they got them in
the same. Right. Who are the parents?
Their parents. Oh. The original creator.
Self. Right. It's not parents. It's parent. Right? One, the creator son. Okay. Is your first instinct, well, that's creepy for a guy to give origin to both men and women. Creator sons and greater. No. No. You're just recognizing that there's a differential, there's a potential within that being, because he's not just a child of the eternal son as the eternal son, he's also a child of the eternal mother son, okay? And that part, the mother son part, the mother part, is in contrast to he's also a child of the universal father. There's a dual within him, father-mother dual, that can give rise to offspring. And matter of fact, both flavors. Okay.
And they say he's more motherlike, actually.
Right. So, you know, appreciate this, that when, especially when you're talking about deity, I mean, you know, don't be careful about, you know, thinking of it in too simplistic of individuality terms, because you're going to anthropomorphize an individuality viewpoint. That's why it's so important to start to challenge yourself to take a deity viewpoint, you know, a top-down viewpoint, so that beings like a creator son aren't so anthropomorphic in your mind. okay. But, yeah, anyway, so here you have John's stationary orders. You know, we have descending, ones that are working horizontally, not vertically, and then the other flavor of vertical, the ascending ones. Okay, get those.
See the ascending orders. 1, adjuster-fused mortals. 2, sun-fused mortals. 3, spirit-fused mortals. 4, translated midwares. 5, unrevealed ascenders.
Okay, so there it is again. You got to throw in an unrevealed one to get 5. So, you know, it's pretty certain now. Okay, we've got 2 5s. Oh, but we have 2 5s. So you're going, I wonder, do you suppose you get 10? Is somehow are these 2 5s the 2 halves of those 10s? there's all kinds, it's just endless questions, see, that begin to be asked as you start to query this. You know, and just these 2 5s, can I somehow line those up? Is there some parallel there or not? I mean, you know, if you're really clever, you can create a parallel out of those 2 sets of 5. You can rationalize that 1 is parallel to 1 and 2 is, I mean, but, you know, try that, you know. If you're clever and you think of a way of rationalizing those 2 in parallel, then go to the revelation and try to refute that idea. See if you can find something that talks about abundanters and something that talks about adjuster-fused mortals. And the more you study it, the more you go, no, I think it's just not holding up. I mean, my rationalization scheme is breaking down the more I study it. It's like, okay, maybe that's not a correct rationalization.
Yep. Well, there are some interesting parallels. There are going to be many ways. I mean, it's going to be kaleidoscopic. But one that immediately comes up for me is the fact that number 1 of the stationary orders and number 2 of the ascending orders, the abundanters and the sun-fused mortals work together on the super universe capitals.
Right.
The sun-fused mortals become the citizens of... They become permanent citizens. They have ascended there. The same thing is true of the Susatia and the spirit-fused mortals, 2 and 3.
Right.
What it then suggests to you, you say, okay, is there a midwayness to the Univitatia in their sense compared to the midwayers? And one aspect of that is that the midwayers or the Univitation are this side of paradise, the closest to beings that really have the height of artistry and beauty that way that Havona beings do, that they're sort of midway that way.
Right.
But that feels rational.
Right, you know, and the Univitation at the constellation level is midway in the local universe's, you know, thing, and oh, that ties with see you, yeah, you can easily rationalize things. You got to be careful. I mean, I've pointed out that the first thing experience I had with how easy it is to rationalize things when I was trying to figure out the true meanings of some of the coinage of, you know, words in the book. You know, you take some word in proper name they've coined, and you try to figure out whether its proper literal meaning is. You know, and you start searching, and you quickly find that you can come up with 6 rationalization schemes, you know, in like a half an hour. And it's like, well, in Romanian, this means that, and, you know, and Japanese, this means that. And it's like, oh, that's really fun. If I put those two together, I love that one. I like that one. You know, it gets all this fancy, you know, feeling, you know, from it. And, but, you know, you put together a few of these, and then you try to refute them. You know, and you go at them and you go at them, you know, and you refute them all. Like, ah, dang it. So then you go back to the drawing board and you hunt around, and then you find it. It's like, oh, yes, of course, that's what it is. I mean, you know, there's a self-evidency to these things that you can experience if you're in that mode of aggressively challenging your second adjutant and its ability to rationalize things. If you're really, you know, keeping a hold of the reins of that second adjutant, in that space of aggressively refuting its rationalization schemes, it sort of allows space. In fact, you're holding onto the reins of it. It allows for this space for a recognition to occur. Otherwise, that second adjutant fills your whole consciousness of space, and there's no place for recognition. There's no place for just that self-evident experience of, oh, that's what it is, you know. And I don't like that favorite one of mine as much anymore, because now I see this one's true, and that's beautiful. That's the true meaning. And that's the experience you're looking for, and what you want to do when you engage these things. Because the smarter you are, the more ways you could rationalize these two lists of five together. You know, and you could take a list of five Hollywood superstars and rationalize it with the stationary orders if you're smart enough, you know, in a random order, okay? You can rationalize anything.
Doesn't always mean it's true. So we're adjust a few morals, right?
Are you?
Not quite.
Matter of fact, we're not even ascending suns technically yet. We're faith suns, but... But we're heading towards being adjusted.
So I will be. Yeah. I'll do what it takes. In any case, am I dual origin because I had a mother and father? Or am I dual origin for another reason?
No, that's what they're pointing out. That in just that simple sense, like the fact that the Sporanga, you know, are dual origin with Gabriel and the father Melchizedek.
Because I had my mom.
Because you had, you're dual origin in that sense.
Not a spiritual thing, not just... My material mother.
Mom. Yeah, you notice how they worded up front. See, it's those of origin of any two of the paradiseities or otherwise created by any two beings of direct or indirect descent from the paradiseities. Well, in other words.
So in vitro, like
the
indirect.
Yeah. See if you can find some being in the universe that isn't indirectly related to the paradise deities. I think that pretty much is everyone. I think there's just one first source and center of all things and beings. Right. So, see, it's fully general. But see, to see that out of the temporal context, from a timeless perspective of paradise, it doesn't matter if your dual originness is your mom and dad, you know, and a creator son's dual origin just is the universal father, the eternal mother son. I mean, forget about the specifics they're saying. There's this truth that there's a duality of origin. Now, destiny is a different thing. You know, when we get to the Isle of Paradise and become a finaliter, we take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, not to the dual of some, you know, in some
not
sense.
To woman.
You know, not to the Father and the Son, for instance. I mean, you know, like I tried to point out as we were going through the previous papers, you know, you come to recognize that you're in a process right now. And that process began, like they're saying here, as a dual with a dual origin. But the dual is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end to become... When all is said and done, is basically a Trinity origin being, but not existentially, like an Ancient of Days say, but experientially. You know, that you, through an experiential process that was initiated in a dual way, you come to be, when all is said and done, of Trinity, you know, evolutionary, experiential Trinity origin. You coalesced out of the whole because of the ubiquity of the Trinity. And when all is said and done, you manifest that fact. That when you go out God revealing as a finaliter, you're God the Mother revealing, it says. You go out as something that stems from the Trinity. The Mother stems from the Trinity. You know, that's what you, when you, you know, so you're being formed right now, and once you formed, you kind of discover, oh, that's what I truly am. I'm what the Trinity is attempting to bring into existence through a very complex evolutionary process, as opposed to just that fiat process of the Trinity making an Ancient of Days, say, existentially. You know, it's not a direct, so you're not direct Trinity origins in that sense, where it has to be existential like that, because the Paradise Trinity is existential. But what stems from the Paradise Trinity is experiential, and in that, it's in that domain, you know, that you're being born, you're coalescing. So,
now what's experiential? What did you just say?
The difference between thinking of experiential Trinity origin in contrast to existential Trinity origin. You know, in truth, you're of experiential Trinity origin. The Trinity, I mean, just like the Supreme Being is. You know, what's the being that expresses the totality of what you're a part? The spirit and personal attributes of the Supreme Being come from the Paradise Trinity. So you're like that. You're a part of that. Okay? But it's not an existential Trinity thing. It's an experiential Trinity thing. And again, notice, it doesn't say mortals here. It doesn't say finaliters. It just adjuster-fused mortals. Forget about time. You know, independent of time, there is a type of being called an adjuster-fused mortal. And in that, it fits into this as a dual-origin ascending type. As a finaliter, you know, you're not an ascending order anymore. So you don't fit there anymore. You know, you're in a different part of the classification scheme.
Yeah.
All right. What was that? Oh, question here too? No. Okay. All right. So anyway, you see, there's you know, I hope you see how this is what they're talking about. You know, when they suggest something, they're hoping for imagination. They're hoping for a stimulus of creative speculation. They want you to start doing this, but do it with aggressive critical thinking. You know, never believe the first thing that your agitated mind bubbles into your head. You know, go at it really aggressively. It's almost 100% guaranteed that you can refute that first thing that pops into your head. And then just keep weeding through them until you can find one that's worth keeping.
I no longer hate popping your bubble.
but you know, even when you find something, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. Don't use the absolute dimension of your personality on even that, because you'll make it static and dead. You got to keep it alive. Don't put white knuckles on anything in your mind. Let them live. You know, let them be always a means to some greater end. Nothing is an end in itself.
So that's like that motto of always, never believe, what is it? Or you can always believe more than you can understand or somewhere, even through faith or whatever it is. In other words, you never really get there.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, that's the nature of truth.
No more than
That it's a way, not a destination. See, what you'll discover is if you don't white knuckle on something, no matter how definitive it seems, when you finally find this, it's like, okay, that's got to be true. What that allows for is over time, what you recognized initially stays unmoved, but greater dimensionality adds to it. It becomes truer than it initially was. But if you just clamp down on it, it'll never become truer, and what was true becomes dead. Right.
God loves me becomes
fair.
Dead. It's a different kind of thing. It just grows.
The more you figure out what the word God means, the more you figure out what the word love means, the more you figure out what me means.
The whole meaning of it.
Yeah. I mean, did I just say something that makes the word me sound a little bit different than what it was 20 years ago? We were just talking about your relationship to the Trinity. It's like, well, I always thought about me as being a son of the Father.
Right.
Yes, but only the moment that you're initiated. After that, things change. For instance, what does it tell you about your whole local universe career? The growing of your soul, is it dominated by relationship to the Father? No. It says the thing that dominates throughout your whole local universe career is your relationship to the Mother. So, well, that's a different me than I've tended to think of myself as. Of all the things that you can put a white knuckle on, that's the most problematic, actually, is your initial recognition of the Father.
God's my Father. Yeah. There's two different things there.
Yeah, but there's God the Father, and he loves you in a certain way. Then there's God the Mother, and how does she love you? Or how about God the Son? God the Son loves you in a different way than God the Father. What's that difference?
We're talking about the spirit of it versus the, you know, the actual literal aspect of this being versus that one, mm-hmm. of the spirit of the growth and understanding. I mean, there's a constant spirit there that, as it grows, no matter what, that feeling or that knowing, you know, doesn't really change
yes.
a whole lot.
Yes, that's what I said. I mean, you know, when you get a hold of a truth, you never have to let go of that. That stays. You know, so, I mean, the thing that you get a hold of first is the Father, because he's the initiator. And yet it remains unmoved for all eternity. But more and more is added to that. Mm-hmm. You know, but the only way that something can be added to that is if you let go of dichotomies, you know. If I say God the Mother, it's like, okay, so there is no God the Father anymore, so I have to throw God the Father out. No. You know, hold on to the Father just as solidly as you had to hold him to start with, how he initiated you. Now, first, you have two hands, okay? You know, how about hold the Father in one hand and the Mother? That's a good way to start. I mean, discover that you have two parents. I mean, we just discovered we're dual origin beings. What does it tell you later on when you get to, you know, later in the book? It says one day you're going to recognize that the true spirit of that dual origin goes beyond your biologic mom and dad. That you have a spiritual father and a cosmic mother, it says. And once you come to recognize that, something that only the fifth epoch of Revelation is revealing to mankind. You know, we've always thought we've had one parent, the Father. The fifth epoch of Revelation finally reveals the obvious. Of course, I must have two parents. Yes, you do, but they're different, and you've got to come to understand. One is spiritual, and the other is cosmic. Okay.
Your meaning and the value of that truth grows.
Yeah.
Which is.
Yeah. And the more you know the difference between the cosmicness of your mother, the more you'll understand the true spiritualness of your father. Because initially, the word spiritual tends to cover everything. It gets blurred into the word cosmic. If you begin to separate those, you begin to understand the truth of your spiritual father, what it was that Jesus was trying to get us to recognize. But until you separate out the cosmic mother, if what you mean by spiritual father is also cosmic mother at the same time, if you haven't separated those, you don't really know the Father. You don't really know who loves you. You want to get a pure recognition of who loves you there. And you can only do that once you separate out God the Absolute, God the Ultimate, God the Supreme, God the Son, God the Spirit, God the Mother, God the Sevenfold. You got to get all that other stuff out of there so that you can actually just look at the pureness of the Father and the pureness of His love. So, you know, after all that process, you discover, yeah, fundamentally, it is still the same love that I initially knew, even when I was immature and confused, but now I see it clearly. Remember, even the Apostle Paul brings in that illusion, you know, looking through a glass darkly initially. One day, Paul knew one day he would see it clearly, and that's all we're trying to do. All right. So now let's get to single origin.
Roman numeral 3, single origin beings. Those of origin in any one of the paradise deities are otherwise created by any one being of direct or indirect descent from the paradise deities. A, the supreme spirits. 1, gravity messengers. 2, the seven spirits of the Havona circuits. 3, the 12-fold adjutants of the Havona circuits. 4, the reflective image aids. 5, universe mother spirits. 6, the sevenfold adjutant mind spirits. 7, unrevealed deity origin beings.
Okay, so now we got a 7, and it had to be 7 by throwing in a blank line, basically. All right. No, okay, but now here we are. Here we are again, the supreme spirits. Ah, here's the, you know, some more of the supreme spirits, only now we've got some other things thrown in, too, like gravity messengers. And okay, so now remember what I said. You know, the fundamental thing about supreme spirits is the relationship to the Trinity, one way or another. So you go, gravity messengers. Okay, these are single origin. I know if I go to the next paper and I read about gravity messengers, I know that they're personalized father fragments. Okay, single origin from the father. They're a fragment of the deity of the father. Why are they in the supreme spirits? So I look a little bit more carefully at the sentence about the gravity messengers. And it says, it doesn't just say that they're personalized, it just says they're modified personalized adjusters. They modify that father fragment, or someone does. The father fragment gets modified and then personalized. Oh. The only way I can know what the modification is by looking him up in this list. The modification is to bring it into relationship to the Trinity. Yeah. And then it's personalized. Oh, and of course, I, as a finaliter, I take an oath to the Paradise Trinity, and the gravity messengers are my messengers, Trinity. That's why we're paired up. Right? That's the modification. So you only know that by the fact that they're in this list. That's how they reveal that, by putting them in this list. And understand, you have to figure out what the key is about supreme. Okay. The seven spirits of the circuits, the Havona circuits, you know, the circuit spirits. Okay. You know, we talked about them. The singularness there is the infinite spirit is who is singularly giving origin. But it's in that Trinity system, you know, the infinite spirit, paradise, Trinity, duality system, that they're coming into existence, and they actually are from the infinite spirit, but through the sevenfold spirit. Remember that super additive consequence of the seven master spirits, you know. So it's a complicated thing, but it's single origin. And again, it's just like with the master spirits. You know, it's in that relationship to the Trinity that they come into existence. It's not just totally independent of the Trinity that the infinite spirits bring him into existence. I mean, like they point out, I mean, it's all of these higher beings are coming into existence in that relationship with the Trinity. And then 12-fold adjutants of the Havona circuits. You know, they mention them in passing. So when you know, Havona, here's where, you know, if it wasn't, you know, pretty clear when they talk about the 12 adjutants of a particular circuit spirit, you know, it's like, well, that sounds like each one has 12. It's like, well, here it is, okay, very directly. Single origin, each single circuit spirit gives rise to 12 adjutants. Okay, so that's just like their universe mother spirits and the sevenfold adjutants. And so I bet you if you unpack the central universe, you're going to understand the reciprocal relationship between a creative spirit and mother spirit and her seven adjutants, and the circuit spirits, and their 12 adjutants. Yes, you do. When you unpack the central universe, you discover that reciprocal relationship between the adjutants of the two. Well, how that works. Reflective image aids. Remember, each reflective mother spirit, so single origin, gives rise to its reflective image aid, you know, its face basically, because those reflective mother spirits are very transcendent relative to the finite. They literally need a face, you know, an avatar, so to speak, for you to be able to approach them. They're just not approachable. They're too diffuse, too transcendent to approach them directly as persons. And so even high beings need to engage them through their image aid. You know, so that's, you know, see, that's the singleness, but it's all, you know, you have mother, that's relationship to the Trinity. You know, so all of those are, see, are the Trinity's the key. And certainly the most, you know, exciting one right off the bat is, I know what the basic modification is of that adjuster before they personalized it, made it a gravity messenger now. Okay, so, but, you know, here we see a seven, you know, and you're going, well, wow, I mean, that doesn't look like the seven master spirits to me, or the seven super universes. What's this seven here? I'm not sure what this seven is. So you got some mysterious seven here you got to figure out. Not to mention the fives and the tens. And, you know, and we did have a three. And it's like, well, I don't know. Is that three father-son spirit? it looks like it's maybe a different three, too. See, so everything seems to be suggesting the absonite here and some patterns in it. Or some subset, see, of patterns that are somehow self-consistent. All right.
B, the ascending orders. One, personalized adjusters. Two, ascending material sons. Three, evolutionary seraphim. Four, evolutionary cherubim. Five, unrevealed ascenders.
So here's a five again. And you know, you can, you know, you first say, well, maybe I can rationalize this five with one of those previous fives. You know, and if you do that, you'll see your juices start flowing and some curious matchings in parallel. But again, notice, I mean, actually material sons are not in this list. Only the ones that have been transformed, you know, and are now ascending material. Ones that now have an adjuster. They're the only ones that are in this list. See, because, you know, basically a material son before they're, you know, before they're given a modified and given an adjuster, they're stationary. And I say, yeah, right. And it's like, well, yeah, they're not in one of those stationary order. I mean, see, there's some very curious things here about, so you wonder, it's like, well, if I could have more of the paradise list, would one of the categories have, you know, non-ascending material sons in it? And, you know, or what? You know, and what does that say about if I have to greatly expand the list in order to get them just in their kind of initial form, apparently I'd have to bring in a whole bunch of other beings that aren't even revealed in here in order for them to have a place? So that's kind of weird. What does that mean about how they really fit in the grand scheme of things then? See, there's all kinds of curiosities about when you start thinking about these lists here, you know, this paradise list. So, you know, and it's, you know, and look at, you know, we have seraphim in the next list. So we have evolutionary seraphim in, distinguished from seraphim. So non-evolutionary seraphim did fit into this circumscribed set, but non-ascending material sons didn't. You know, et cetera. So you can see how many curious things are going on here. All right. Let's see. Is there anything else? Well, let's see. You know, here, I just can't resist here. You know, compare the two ascending orders. Okay. Adjuster-fused mortals, personalized adjusters. Sun-fused mortals, ascending material suns. Spirit-fused mortals, evolutionary seraphim. Translated midwares. Oh, yeah, kind of getting down there to the level of midwares, at least primary midwares. Evolutionary cherubim. Yeah, you know, it's curiously, the two ascending lists of five seem to have some pretty immediate parallels that make you curious. All right, let's get the last set here.
Any thoughts on unrevealed descenders?
Yeah. Oh, well,
yes.
Yeah, one of the funniest things about that, okay, as long as you bring it up, you know. One of the things that just, you know, really throws you for a curve when you get to paper 36, you know, and you... and you're reading about the basic life patterns, and they say that there are three primal and essentially different life plans after the order of the three paradise sources and centers. And in the universe of Nebadon, these three basic forms of life are segregated on three different types of planets. You're going, what does that mean? Three different types of planets? Well, that certainly leaves some space open for unrevealed ascenders, in my opinion. I mean, I still don't know what to make of that statement.
Jane, stop that.
What is the deal there with father, son, spirit type planets? You know, and then obviously, I mean, they're mortals, I guess. Are they all, maybe they're not ascenders, but at least, you know, some of them you might think are ascenders, and so, yeah, there's got to be some unrevealed ascenders there. Which of the three type am I?
Two brain.
No, that's that. My father, son, or spirit, what kind of a planet am I on? I mean, that's, you know, that's a mysterious statement. Okay, next list here.
See the family of the infinite spirit. One, solitary messengers. Two, universe circuit supervisors. Three, census directors. Four, personal aides of the infinite spirit. Five, associate inspectors. Six, assigned sentinels. Seven, graduate guides. Eight, Havona servitals. Nine, universal conciliators. 10, Marantia companions. 11, Supernaphim. 12, Sakonaphim. 13, Tertiaphim. 14, Omniaphim. 15, Seraphim. 16, Cherubim and Sanabim. 17, unrevealed spirit origin beings. 18, the seven supreme power directors. 19, the supreme power centers. 20, the master physical controllers. 21, the Marantia power supervisors.
Okay, well, 21, wow. That's that begs 7 times 3, of course. And you do notice, you know, we got the 7 in this, you know, this number 3 set here. So is that what it is? Is it 7 times 3? It doesn't seem to immediately break in three blocks of 7. But that aside, you do notice something. This list seems a little bit more kind of like what you might expect. You know, and it is just called the Family of the Infinite Spirit. Part of the reason for that is, who is the God of Action? Which of the three is the deity that is sort of directly engaging the domain that we're in from the existential side? See, so, not surprisingly, looking at it from a more of a source perspective compared to our experience side of it, it's similar. You know, you've got the personal ministry and the power ministry coming from the infinite spirit, but they do put it all together in one list, which is certainly, again, see, speaking to transcending that simple difference between power and personality that we have in the finite. When you get to the absonite, those energy pattern and spirit pattern are not as definitively different. And so the power and the personality ministry from that perspective would be more all together as one group. You see that? And then, of course, you know, because it does seem to have a much more immediately apparent, simple hierarchical expression and stuff, that's why it's all the more suspicious that, you know, those unrevealed angels that they mention, you know, up there on the with the Father's worlds, it's one of the secrets, you know, that they're below cherubim and sanabim, that they're, you know, that unrevealed order of angels, that lesser order of angels is, you know, right there in the list. Well, we don't know what they are. I mean, we don't know what to call them, but they're just, they're an order of angels that are parallel to secondary midwares. Whereas cherubim, you know, are a little bit more parallel to primary midwares. You know, there's a lower order of angels, unrevealed, that apparently can directly engage material things, unlike even cherubim, even, you know, the lower orders of cherubim, like Miraja cherubim. Okay, so, yeah, that's, you know, that's certainly the spot that makes it very suspicious, you know, and then, of course, you know, there's that place when they're talking about post-rebellion, how things are being directed, you know, and they mention in passing the director of that lesser order of angels. Okay, so, yep, so there's that, you know, there are everyone's favorite little mystery, that lower order of angels. You know, and then you're just left to wonder, it's like, okay. Again, I'm not surprised that of all the lists, this is the biggest one, because like they've said, told me several times, it's the infinite spirit, you know, all of the hands that it takes to be the God of action, that's where the really big numbers are. Okay. And so, you know, here you see it again, very big list. All right. So, I mean, that's as far as you can kind of go on a first crack. You know, now just all the questions remain. You know, how far are we going to have to go down the road of unpacking the revelation before, you know, these numbers are going to be apparent? You know, why it's 7, 5, 21 in this list, for instance, and not, you know, 3... 10, 5, something, you know, whatever. Yeah, I have no idea.
The beginning is classified in terms of inherent and attained relationships.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that has to do something with the number that is in there. Their inherent ability or to be classified or attainability.
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, that's just in that first one. Remember when you're talking about
and you, like you mentioned a minute ago, you said, you know, maybe finaliters have already gotten there, but it says right. When they come together, even I guess if they are a finaliter, they're classified on how they, what their origin was.
Well, see, you notice finaliter is not in this list anywhere.
Right, but well, it is.
Because they're a very complicated thing. They're you know.
But they're ascending morals because it says that they're classified, even if they're finaliters, I would imagine, in accordance to what their origin was.
Now, but see, I'm just the thing is curious about this is just what's here and what isn't. You know, I would think that if you got a bigger paradise list, it would have finaliter in it somewhere. But apparently, you need to have a whole bunch of other stuff before that fits into the list. You know, now they're about to tell us some of the beings that they need to talk about. That didn't fit in this list.
They do say it's difficult to interpret the paradise classifications.
Okay, so I'm just notice that there's a lot said in both in what's immediately in front of you and what isn't immediately in front of you. You know, what isn't there and what is there is telling you things. It's, you know, and to try to if you know, but before you could even begin to understand, trying to try to speculate about what. You know, why what isn't there isn't there, you'd have to figure out the patterns of what is there, you know? And I don't know, maybe it's impossible to go beyond that. But, you know, at least, you know, for the next 1,000 years or whatever. All right, let's get a little bit more here.
Roman numeral 4, eventuated transcendental beings. There is to be found on paradise a vast host of transcendental beings whose origin is not ordinarily disclosed to the universes of time and space until they are settled in light and life. These transcendentalers are neither creators nor creatures. They are the eventuated children of divinity, ultimacy, and eternity. These eventuators are neither finite nor infinite. They are absonite. And absonity is neither infinity nor absoluteness.
Okay, so you got a lot of it at the end there that is just re-stressing, you know, what you ought to have been getting your mind wrapped around, the whole fact of the absonite. Use of the word eventuate relative to the absonite, simply because when you talk about evolution eventually comes to a completion. So to talk about bringing an absonite being into existence, calling that eventuating, or a being that does that, an eventuator, you know, is just saying that the starting point of an absonite being is the end point, of the evolutionary process, that eventually. You know, you wrap up the whole finite evolutionary process, and eventually you have it, you have it encompassed. That's the starting point for those eventuated beings. Just in the same way that millions of years of evolution is all wrapped up into your starting point. You don't have to relive 550 million years of eukaryotic evolution. That all gets pretty much rolled up into your starting point. So all of us are eventuated, to some degree. It's just when they're talking about eventuated here, they mean the total eventuation, the whole finite. That's what's the starting point for an absonite being, not just part of the finite, like is what's in you. Okay, but one of the most mind-boggling statements in the whole revelation, Andre just read. There's this vast host of transcendental beings whose origin is not ordinarily disclosed to the universes of time and space until they are settled in light and life. Okay, in other words, the mortals on a world, they don't normally disclose the existence of transcendentalers until that world is in a local universe that's settled in light and life. Not a local system that's settled in light, not a constellation that's settled, but a whole local universe is settled in light and life before the mortals on a world are told about transcendental beings.
Well, the origin is it.
Eh?
Whose origin is that origin? Eh? That means that they told us the most lowly planet in the universe?
Okay. Let this sink in. Okay.
About it. How much compensation are we getting?
I want you to appreciate it. In other words, what I've done in working with the revelation, writing Total Deity, writing the appendix, and then being able to write the Pattern Universe paper, okay, that all begins with what they've revealed to me about the master architects. That's one of the keys to get that process started. If I didn't know about the master architects, I couldn't get that process started. So in other words, you're able to do with this revelation what a mortal on a world that's settled so deep in light and life it's beyond imagination can't do as a mortal.
It's got to be good for longer than 1,000 years.
Okay. It's a mind-boggling statement. You read, it's like, oh no, I must be reading this wrong. They don't say disclosed to the worlds of time and space until they are settled in light and life. They're literally talking about, they're talking about a world, of course, revealing it to a world, because, when you go up in the ascension scheme, you're going to understand about these things. But the mortals on a world, you have to get the whole local universe settled in light and life before those mortals know about that. That's just an amazing statement.
But we do have the combination of being the planet that our Michael son had his final incarnation upon, plus we're a decimal planet.
Well, all of that
us,
is...
we're in total rebellion.
The thing is, I mean, it's just another example of how I mean, yes, it starts with the decimal world and more things. You know, this is the wild card world. I mean, I'm just trying to stress this. Mary, I said this up front. I mean, the things that they're revealing to us, have they ever done this before?
Not in a book.
I mean, have they ever given revelation about transcendental beings like this to a world in this primitive of a state of evolution? And what does this do? What will this do? It'll do nothing if you don't take delight in cultivating. I mean, if this is just a book that you read words in, you know, it's not going to do anything. But if you begin to strike step with some truth, and it begins to subtly transform your mind, after generations, what is this going to lead to? This is an interesting experiment. There's a catalytic agent that they've thrown into this that is very fascinating. It's just an amazing thing to think about that. Yeah, I didn't appreciate that initially. That, you know, as you start running with the revelation, you're doing something that beings on World Settling Light and Life don't do. You're actually running with bigger picture.
Maybe it's compensation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, for what?
I got a question.
Yeah, for what?
And if you've discussed this many times before, because I haven't been here, just tell me, shut up. Eventuated, transcendental. You know, I have absinthe. Maybe everybody else gets it, but I have a hard time, you know, visualizing or understanding a transcendental, absinthe, eventuated type being. That's not, you know, what they say here is, you know, not finite nor infinite. They're absinthe, in other words. So, as you guys have already gone through this a ton of times, probably.
Well,
no.
The simplest way that I found to begin to bring some tangibility to the idea of transcendental absinthe, super this, super that, is when you begin to reflect on the other eight triunities. They give you the first seven of the 15 triunities. Those seven are the ones that are directly related to the finite. The next eight, you know, the other eight, are the ones that are bringing the absinthe. And when you actually, it's just a simple exercise to just list the other eight. I mean, you know, you just have 15 different combinations of the seven absolutes where the Father is one of the three. You know, just list the other eight. And then start to reflect on them. And that's what I did. And that's, you know, that's my initial reflections are in that triune pattern paper that I wrote back in 2001. I mean, when you start to actually reflect on what's going on there with those other eight triunities, you begin to get the picture. It's like, oh, I'm starting to understand. I mean, fundamentally, you know, what's going on with the absinthe is that you don't have this distinct separation between matter and spirit, like you do in the finite. Okay? That you can weave those two together, actually you blend them together homogeneously, you can blend them together in lots of different ways, and there's a much more complex process for taking those kinds of sort of cross terms, if you will, in the relationships, and bringing those from potentiality to actuality to reality. That's what you see when you go through those other eight triunities, is you begin to get the sense of how much more complicated of a process it is, but you begin to see how it has this super additive relationship. It's transcendental. The word transcendental means that it's above the finite, but it's still in definitive relationship to the finite. It's not completely separated and just other and you know, there's just like two island universes and there's no relationship between them. That's transcendental is not like that. Transcendental at least has a boundary that's intimately the ceiling of the finite. You know, the floor of the absentite is the ceiling of the finite. They're intimately related there. Okay, so that you can you reach up in the finite and through that boundary and into that which transcends the finite. That's what transcends mean. As opposed to if it's totally separate, you know, you reach up and you just hit the ceiling and you're stuck. You know, you no way to get to that.
Minded.
Oh yeah, it's all minded, and you know, but it's just that matter, mind, spirit. Instead of just having the two triodities of potentiality and actuality for matter, mind, and spirit, that you know, have them definitively separated. There's matter, mind, spirit, potential, matter, mind, spirit, actual. That's all there is to it in the finite. But in the absentite, there's 18 other triodities. There's 18 other ways that you can blend together what's very separate about matter, mind, and spirit. And it takes 8 additional triunities to engage that additional energy complexity and guide it from potential to actual to real.
Hard to envision.
Okay. But to just begin to, you know, to think of it as, you know, as intermediate between something down here. When I see matter and spirit down here, if I could see spirit, I go, wow, that is really different. That's like oil and water. It's just, those are very, very separate. If you go all the way up to the absolute level, they say if you look at, if you put what they say is matter in front of you and you put what they say is spirit in front of you and you go, not seeing it, looks like the same stuff to me. Looks like the substance of the isle and the body of the eternal sun are the same thing.
But it's not that there's no matter.
No, it's absolute matter. The Isle of Paradise is absolute matter. I mean, there's matter like you've never imagined. There's, you know, it's definitively absolute matter. But experientially, you don't see any difference. See, existentially, there's a difference. But experientially, you can't experience a difference. So in the finite, you experience a huge difference. And on the absolute level, you experience no difference. Well, there's an in-between. That's the absentite domain, where there, you know, there's a similarness and a separateness at the same time. They aren't one or the other. They're not just totally similar or totally separate. That's the absentite. Okay.
So back to one of the
okay. things. Yep.
This
yep.
paragraph really, you said it's pretty interesting. Why is it? Would you say?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody can answer this question. Yeah. Wouldn't disclosed as to a universe until it's in
light. Well, I mean, see, all we have, I think, to work with initially in that thought is what they tell you about the normal planetary epochs. You know, that on a normal world, the planetary prince comes and they only reveal up to the local system level. So those beings, for those beings, all they ever hear is God the Father is the system sovereign. They know nothing above that until Adam and Eve come. And then Adam and Eve say, actually, the Father is the constellation Father. They reveal up to the constellation level. And that's all they know for ages. For them, God is the constellation Father for all those creatures. You know, getting all the way to the full advancement of science and everything, they're doing that with all they have is the Most High for an idea of God. And then the magisterial son comes, and he says, well, actually, the Father is the local universe Father, creator son. They reveal up to the local universe capital level. And then the bestowal son comes and says, no, actually, the Father is the super Father. They reveal up to the super universe capital level. The Ancients of Days is God. And then finally you get the Trinity teacher sons, and they reveal Havona and the Isle of Paradise to you for the first time. So you have beings that have gone through all this revelation, you know, are so much more advanced that we can't even imagine, and they don't know about the central universe and the universal Father. Well, you know, in the way, like we can just reading this book.
Yeah. Hard to...
Right. On a normal world, they keep the population in a very narrow distribution. They quickly come in and get rid of all of the huge spread in the bell curve. And they get it really tight. And they carefully, methodically, and slowly move that tight little bell curve forward. You know, and you just know what you need to know then. You know, and after a million years, maybe they'll tell you about some bigger things.
And it's almost like it's not safe for them to know more than that.
So I'm going to ask a really tough question here. So why is this different than, you know, Lucifer trying to over-revelate?
See, that's the thing that some of, as I'm trying to get you to reflect on. This has approved. Somehow this fits into the Supreme. What Lucifer was trying to do didn't fit into the evolution of the Supreme. That's why it was rebellion. That's why it was evil. This fits in somehow.
I didn't mean that.
No, but that's the appropriate way to think about it. I mean, it's...
The thing, Michael approved the Urantia revelation.
Right.
He has decided that we here are qualified, not all of us right away, but as a planet, if we choose to know this, we will self-qualify for the revelation of the transcendentalers and everything else that's in here.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, again, when you, what Andre is saying, I mean, if you let that sink in, I mean, that's why you really can't say anything about what the future holds. I mean, the normal planetary mortal epics have already been thrown out the window. I mean, the fact that they're revealing these really advanced things, I mean, it suggests to me that we might get one of those unrevealed suns that normally don't come to worlds. I mean, we may get, you know, a sun that, you know, is not even talked about in here. And it could just, like, change everything.
Well, I was down there.
We don't know.
What are the ramifications for us being quarantined in this context, you know? We have another reason to be quarantined because no other worlds are supposed to know this.
Well, that's not getting off the world that quickly. You know?
Well, yeah, I mean, but that, you know, just the spirit of what he's saying. I mean, you know, forget about the details, just the spirit. I mean, yeah, I mean, what, you know, it's not like they've built a wall around this planet. Visitors come and go. So, you know, in the spirit of what Andre is saying, Michael has made some big decisions here about the whole local universe.
Yeah.
This isn't just for us. This is for the whole local universe. And see, this is giving us stuff about, you know, it's essentially going to potentially give all mortals in this local universe stuff about the transcendentalers before this local universe is settled in life. Not just this world. It's hard for us to not just always, you know, make the universe revolve around us. I mean, he's changing everything.
Are you saying that because when we get to the Mansion Wars, we're going to tell all the other people?
No, the visitors.
All the visitors.
I mean, there could be a visitor sitting right here looking at this, okay? It's not hidden. And he could be from a different local universe. He could be from, I mean, there's just like all kinds of things in play here. What, I mean.
And there's no gag order.
Okay. I mean, yeah, the circuits are closed, but, so, you're right. To Andre's point, some very huge decisions have been made. You know, and this is like one of the spots in the book that really becomes clear. It's a lot more than just giving you, you know, stuff about Havona before your Trinity teacher son gets here.
Yeah.
There's some huge decisions that Michael's made. Yeah. You know, that whole bit about how he decided to spend his public ministry continuing in the mode of revealing God the Father rather than starting to reveal God the Supreme like he could have. As a, you know, rather than revealing himself as a power personality synthesis, like he could then, it strikes me that was just for then. I think he's got some supreme things in mind here. I think he's he's planning on doing some really big things that aren't normally done in a local universe.
Compelling first volley.
Right. This is a very intriguing volley that we happen to be able to hold in our laps, you know, that apparently is going to change the whole local universe. Okay. So, anyway.
Aren't we all honored?
Right. Right. I feel pretty honored that I could actually, you know, run with this information about the architects and eventually get to the point where I can derive the nature of the first source and center. I can derive the nature of the paradise. I can do things because they've revealed this stuff that very advanced beings normally can't do. They might be able to do anti-gravity and know automatons and everything, but they don't know how you easily fit the consummator of universe destiny into the picture, and I do. We can. We can know these things. Well, it's really amazing. It's a
tremendous responsibility. Could be quite a few visitors
on those of us who have a revelation of this magnitude.
Totally. Makes you feel giant. Like you got
to... What are we doing?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, let's finish up this little block, and then we'll quit for tonight here on this.
Go on that staff all night.
These uncreated non-creators are ever loyal to the Paradise Trinity and obedient to the ultimate. They are existent on four ultimate levels of personality activity and are functional on the seven levels of the Absinthe in 12 grand divisions consisting of 1,000 major working groups of seven classes each.
Before you read the rest of it... So you're going, I see a seven, and I'm not sure what it means. Oh, and I saw sevens in the list. I see a 12. I saw a 12 in the list. I mean,
four.
You know, 10, you know, cubed to get 1,000, 10 times 3. See, like I said, it's pretty likely. See, it's these absinthe patterns that I don't understand yet, that are tied to those numbers in the paradise list. Now, some of them that you can immediately go, aha, oh, there's four ultimate levels of personality activity. See, the difference between one of the fundamental differences between the finite and the absinthe, in the finite you have, you know, one level of supreme personality activity. With the absinthe, you have four levels of personality activity. Not just one. That's why there's four outer space levels. Because you're going through, you know, each of the levels of ultimate personality activity, one by one. And there's seven levels of the absinthe, as opposed to just one level of the finite. There's seven levels of the absinthe, you know. And so, when you study the master architects some more, you see that sevenfoldness, built into their numbers. Okay, so there's seven levels of absinthe. So the actuality has seven levels. And there's four ultimate levels of personality activity. The reality has four levels. Seven actuality levels and four reality levels. And all of the combinations of that. So the ultimate, see, is a very complex thing. And notice what they also told you. I mean, obviously they're going to be obedient to the ultimate as absinthe beings. But what does it say? These uncreated non-creators are ever loyal to the Paradise Trinity. Well, as a finaliter, I'm ever loyal to the Paradise Trinity. That's what I took an oath to. Oh. future co-workers here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But they're uncreated.
Right. And what does that mean? Right. I mean, they're eventuated. I mean, remember, the word created and creature applies to the finite. You create finite things. They're about to say that here coming up. Remember, you create finite, you eventuate absinthe. They're uncreated, they're event because they're eventuated. They're not finite.
So in our mind, it's maybe a little bit semantic. Eventuated could mean they're brought into existence.
Yes, they're brought into existence.
Okay.
You have created, eventuated, and eternalized. Those are three different ways you could be brought into existence. Okay.
But we're spanning all those.
Okay. See, they're eventuated into existence rather than created into existence. They will do things like, instead of calling them creatures as absinthe beings, you know, here they're not just creatures, they'll call them super creatures. Okay, so, you know, just the non-eventuator absentite being is a super creature, whereas finite non-creator beings are creatures. So, yeah, they're using the terminology. So you could say it's just semantic, but it's a lot more than just having another word to talk about it. I mean, there's a truth in it. What's the truth of the difference?
Yep. Well, they don't have beginnings in time.
Right.
And as a result of that, that makes them completely incomprehensible to a finite being in that sense. You know, you can't really comprehend a being that doesn't begin in time in the same way that you can't comprehend the non-beginning nature of the Universal Father or any of the deities or any other being that's like that, the Havona natives or the Paradise citizens.
And the easiest way to begin to really kind of think about that, you know, they had no beginning in time, is, you know, flip things around. I mean, see, instead of thinking about trying to understand it bottom up, just top down, the pure fiat thing is bringing it, are the absolutes. Okay? Then you downstep that to beings that are, you know, so you have beings that are eternalized into existence, and then you have beings that are eventuated into existence. They touch upon that, you know, fiat of being eternalized in existence on the one end, but they touch upon the time at the other end. Okay? They don't have a beginning in time, but they have a beginning in transcendent time, if you will, or transcending time. I mean, they have a relationship to time. Yeah, and how you understand it, obviously, is not, you know, straightforward. But that's the difference. They have that fiat because of their connection to the eternal, but they also have this mysterious relationship transcendently to time. And so in some, well, when we're absentite beings and we can see the order of things there, we'll understand how you think about, well, there's these, and then later there's these beings. You know, it's just not a simple temporal later, but there's a sequence to them that's a downstepped expression of the existential sequence that's on the Isle of Paradise. But it's not just a temporal sequence like down here. It's something in between an existential sequence and an experiential sequence, you know, or finite experiential sequence.
How to think about antecedent causation in the absent.
Right. You know, there's all these, you know, but anyway. Okay, so let's just get some more here.
Okay.
So just these eventuated beings, yeah.
These eventuated beings include the following orders. One, the architects of the master universe. Two, transcendental recorders. Three, other transcendentalers. Four, primary eventuated master force organizers. Five, associate transcendental master force organizers.
Again, it's five. You know, and they had to make it five by throwing in other transcendentalers. So there's the five again.
God as a superperson eventuates. God as a person creates. God as a pre-person fragments. And such an adjuster fragment of himself evolves the spirit soul upon the material and mortal mind in accordance with the free will choosing of the personality which has been bestowed upon such a mortal creature by the parental act of God as a father.
And what a nice little poetic way to end there. You can see how they're transitioning to the fragmented, you know, things next in the next block there. But, you know, what's the spirit of there? I mean, they're not just giving you that stuff that you can immediately kind of get a hold of a little bit more because it relates to you, just to make you feel better. They're trying to get you to notice the spirit. Even when you're talking about transcendental beings, it doesn't matter if you think about God as a super person or as a person or whatever. It's all about God as a father. What does that mean? When all is said and done, it's about God as a father. It's about God as the initiator. Whether it's, no matter how transcendent it is or what, that's the universal fact about God the Father. He's the initiator. That's what he does. Doesn't matter if he's creating, you know, eventuating, fragmenting. All of that is about one thing and one thing only. He's initiating. He's initiating you. He's initiating transcendental beings. So even though those beings didn't have a beginning in time, they were initiated. They didn't self-initiate. They were initiated by the initiator, the Father. That's what the Father is all about. He's the initiator. So they use that. See, it's an opportunity to stress that.
John Stevens wrote, they progressively individualized from the unity of total deity out of the unity of total deity.
Mm-hmm. Right. All that, just looking at it from the top down, you see, you know, everything is coalescing out of deity. Okay, and the one being that initiates that coalescence, no matter what the details of the coalescence, you know, are, this is the Father initiates that process, high and low and everywhere. Okay, all right. So, a great way to end, and it might even tie into our little reflective line at the end here. Let's take a moment here.